Hello and welcome to another episode of Inspired Women Gathering Show. This is a show that talks about all things from life, relationships, spirituality, business, and everything in between. Women are so inspiring, living through their stories, finding resilience, resourcefulness, tenacity, and the powerful impact that we make in the world. I love connecting and having deep conversations, sharing with you the women I am inspired by and so blessed to know. My name is Dixie Bennett. I'm your host, and I'm a soulful women and wealth coach and healer, helping heart-centered entrepreneurial women heal their self-worth, embody their soul purpose, and create sustainable business with heart. And I created this platform to highlight amazing women who I come across and connect with. I hope you enjoy them as much as I do. I am so excited to introduce to you a beautiful soul, Robin Mattray, and our topic today is Flat, Fit, and Fabulous. Robin is a graduate of the Mount Royal Social Work Diploma Program, entrepreneur, public speaker, and artist, has spent her lifetime in building community. She just cannot stop connecting people. It is her passion. Robin has found her favorite spot. It is to be with school-aged children and their families, which is her main community-based business, Maple Roots. You can also find her telling stories and speaking to others about her journey with lupus, stage 4 inflammatory breast cancer, and fitness. Lastly, she uses her art as a therapeutic refuge, which then leads to amazing connections to those that receive her art. She is thrilled to be here and does not have a problem striking up a dialogue. So thank you so much, Robin, for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. Let's get chitty chatty.
this is so exciting. I've gotten to know Robin a little bit over the years. We've sat down and had some beautiful conversations, and she just continues to inspire me in so many ways. So I'm delighted to share her with you today. So Robin, why don't you just tell us a little bit about, because you've got so many things. So you're a business owner, you've been going through cancer as well and battling lupus and keeping fit and fabulous. How do you do it all?
Well, you take just one little bit at a time. I certainly wouldn't suggest carrying the whole plate all in the same moment. And to be honest, there are moments where I'm not fabulous. Mm-hmm. But really, I have leaned on a community of support through every phase of my life. And I think that that building of community has helped me to engage and be part of anything I've done, whether it be dealing with chronic illness, whether it be starting a business, whether it be connecting to the speaking community, or within my art. I just have this habit of really just diving in and getting to know people. It started when I was 4 years old and playing in my grandmother's yard. And I saw a woman dressed similarly to my grandmother. So I assumed that she should be my grandmother's friend. And I pulled her off the street and brought her into my grandmother's house and said, "Grandma, I found you a friend." And my poor grandmother didn't even know who the woman was. So I have never had an issue in approaching people and connecting. Where I saw a need, apparently I thought that my grandma needed more friends.
Aw, that's so sweet. Well, and that's part of the intuition that you do follow. Is that a big part for you?
You know, it truly is. I went through an interesting exercise last week talking about what value drives you in every decision you make. Mm-hmm. Like in every decision you make, what value drives that? And for me, it's that piece of purpose. Mm-hmm. Grounded in my intuition. Mm-hmm. If I can feel that I can connect and put myself into that relationship, then I am all in. Mm. Yeah, and as much as I put in, I feel like I receive so much back from those experiences.
Powerful. Yeah, our values are so important, and that check-in, right? To check into, am I operating in the highest alignment? Because if it's not in alignment, it's not going to work.
Never. never, and you'll feel it. Yeah. It's not the challenge of being uncomfortable. It's, wow, this is going against every sense of my being, and mm-hmm. I am struggling. Mm-hmm.
So how long have you been battling with this cancer, inflammatory breast cancer?
Sure. I was diagnosed in September 2016 okay. with stage 3C /4 inflammatory breast cancer, which is a very aggressive form of cancer. I had been for a mammogram in June and had been told that there was less than 6% chance that I had cancer. Mm-hmm. And that I should come back in 6 months. But intuition really drove me to get myself to a doctor mm-hmm. and push it faster. And thankfully I did because I was undergoing treatment by the end of September 2016 mm-hmm. Aggressively. So I went through aggressive treatment and then I had a bilateral mastectomy in the late winter of 2017, and then I went through significant rounds of radiation just to kind of clean things up, and then I was hormonally suppressed. So I got to do the forced menopause, mm-hmm. which is a crash course in complete imbalance.
Right.
And so then the thought was that it would not feed the cancer cells. Because my cancer is hormone positive. And unfortunately, it metastasized into my liver. Mm-hmm. And so I had breast cancer growing in my liver mm-hmm. In 2018. And so then I had another intervention, which had me in the hospital to complete, which was an internal radiation. Mm-hmm. And I didn't respond very well to that. It resulted in a stay in palliative care, mm-hmm. and which was very, very grounding. And it was the worst after school special ever. Mm. Here I am in the cancer palliative care at Christmas time, and you can almost hear the background music playing. And it was just, I was just like, I couldn't believe it was happening. Mm-hmm. And, but thankfully, I responded well. And here I am now. I am what they call quiescent, meaning that my disease is still there, mm-hmm. but managed. So I'm on daily chemo and a whole bunch of other medications, mm-hmm. and doing everything I can to support my health, right? Mm. So, yeah.
Because a big part of your identity is flat, fit, and fabulous. And
absolutely, yeah.
Do you mind if we talk a little bit just about having the breasts removed and just some of the sure. what you went through and that experience and why you decided to stay flat?
So, prior to having my breasts removed, I never felt that my breasts were a nuisance or anything like that. But when I was getting ready to have them removed, I really struggled with my identity. Mm. And it took some time to really understand why I was struggling with that. After they were removed, it took me a couple of weeks to really stop and look at myself. Mm. I would just look to do what I need to do to clean up and watch my tubing and drainage and all those pieces, but it was more a function and it wasn't emotional. Mm-hmm. And so the first time I really looked at my chest was very emotional. Mm. It wasn't just about my breasts not being there. Mm-hmm. It was really everything that led up to that point, and that I was still there to mm-hmm. be able to reflect on that. In part, the decision was made for me not to have breast reconstruction. in that with inflammatory breast cancer, you're not to have any kind of reconstruction for at least a year after treatment, because they want to ensure that there's no remaining cancer cells. So, you know, I had a good year to think about it, and I really struggled. I was just like, I'm bald, I have no breasts, I have this big Buddha belly from treatment, I don't look like myself, I feel like myself on the inside, but I do not know this troll walking around. You know, I really did not identify with what I was seeing visually. So I set that aside, that I need to take control of this. And so I decided to work on my fitness journey and strengthen myself from inside in that way. And as I went along and started building muscles and feeling my strength in my body, regaining feeling across my chest, I went, you know what? I like being flat. I really do. I think I'm still feminine. I think I'm still womanly. And many people don't even recognize that I've had a double mastectomy, you know? And so now I'm like, I get who I am right now, and I've reframed it, and I'm really happy with who I am. And I mean, it's a personal choice for everyone, but for me, I'm good. And I met a lady when I was in radiation. She said to me, I'm flat and I'm proud of it, you know. and I said, okay, which made me feel a little bit. I'm like, why are you telling me this? This is the strangest thing I've ever heard. But I feel like that lady now. If I see women going through this, I'm like, hey, you know what? It's okay. At the end of the day, it's your choice.
Yeah.
And I had a similar experience at the Woman Talk conference last fall, and met a fellow thriver. And she came up to me, and I had been talking about being flat, and she said to me, I really admire you for not feeling you need to wear a prosthesis, and I really admire you for what you said. And then that night there was a social, and she came up to me and she said, look, I'm flat too.
Aww, I love
and that brought so much joy to my heart.
Yeah, that is so powerful. Well, and ever since I've known you and ever since I first seen you present on stage, that's not something that I looked for sure. It's definitely, you know, it's a form of femininity. It's a physical form of femininity, and you're re-identifying what femininity is for you. And you have great sense of style. I love your hair and your sense of clothing choice, you know, just the way that you present yourself and dress up. You're very feminine in the way that you present yourself.
Thank you. I try to zhuzh it up.
Zhuzh it up. I love it. Well, you zhuzh it very well. But I know that there undergoes a lot of confusion, maybe most women have trouble identifying who they are anyway. And, you know, being feminine is the physical aspect. And what would you say, what's some advice, some words of advice in just helping women with confidence and with women and their body image?
I think it's really taking time to reflect on what is beautiful about you. Like I took some photos of myself in that moment when I was really reflecting. And I took photos of my chest and my face and how I was feeling, and then later I went back to look at it to see it from a different perspective. And I went, you know what, I saw the feeling in my eyes, the emotion, right. And I was like, okay, you know what, I've got pretty damn good eyes, you know, I can focus on that, or I can focus on what my assets are, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's always going to be something, no matter what journey you're on, that you're going to look at in the mirror and go, ugh, I got to do something about this, or ugh, oh, I wish this was one way or another. And I really think that those little jabs that we do at that self-talk that we put on ourselves is really mm-hmm. destructive. Mm-hmm. So it's just reframing those pieces of what do I love about myself? Like what's really great? Like why do I attract people, and what makes them feel good to be around me, and really identifying what you bring to connections. Mm-hmm. So because if it's coming from inside, it just blows out, you know?
For sure. Yeah. I love that. And I wanted you to talk a little bit about, because you did bodybuilding last year. Was it last year?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and just that identifying yourself as you know, just really chiseling your body and dreading that stage. What was that experience like for you?
Well, we'll put some framework around that. Most of it was chiseled. There was still a little... There are still some areas, but
you did a lot of work. It was really impressive.
I did a lot of work.
You and, you know, I mean, it was your first year. It was your first time. And I have some other friends who do bodybuilding as well. And just watching, you know, I watch them go through their cycles of, and I have a friend who's done it many times. I'm not, she's done it, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 times. And just watching her cycle and what she goes through and how she builds, leans, and then when she's in her off time, and just, it's hard on the body for sure.
It truly is. It's an intensity for
Very
for
intense,
sure.
Yeah. And what was that like? Especially, you know, going through lupus, having lupus as part of your daily experience and, you know, just managing your health.
So, you know, again, I just took it in little steps. So when I decided to start training, I added in a weightlifting session once a week. Mm. And I did it with a personal trainer. Mm-hmm. And I really had to learn how my muscles moved in my torso and in my right arm. Because I had a lot of surgery in those areas and a lot of nerve damage and some muscle removed. So it didn't feel the same as it did before. Mm-hmm. And so I really just worked hard at doing what I was told to do, because sometimes it's okay just to lean into the experts on those pieces. And that's what I did. I leaned in and I just put my nose down. And I said, okay, how many? All right, let's go. How many squats? And then just made it a personal challenge. Was I the best in the group? No. But for me, I saw the shift in my body from when I started to when I hit the stage. And as I got closer to competition, I picked up kickboxing just to try to lean out a bit more. And I picked up a little more cardio, but with my chemo, it limited my cardio. I just couldn't get as much in as I wanted to, but I just kept pressing on. I said, you know what? I can only do my best. Mm-hmm. If I'm doing my best, that's what I'm going to do. And the good thing about preparing for competition is you really push into your proteins and eat pretty clean, which is also a good thing for cancer, you know? But it's a pretty restrictive kind of way of eating. And, you know, there's no little glass of wine at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, 12 weeks out, you are really hyper-focused. Mm-hmm. And what was really great about this particular competition was that it was a group of women of many ages and stages and many stories. Of the group of us, none of us were fitness pros.
Great.
We're all kind of between 40 and 65 years old.
Wow.
And we were just trying to do something better than we did yesterday.
Yeah.
And we became this sisterhood. Mm-hmm. And it was so supportive. Like, though we were competing against each other, it was non-competitive. We were just so happy for each other. Mm-hmm. And the day before the competition is when all the glam happens, right?
Right, yeah.
You go in and you get your first coat of spray tan,
yeah,
which is so shocking, so shocking. And you can't really do anything. And then the second day, the morning of, you go and get your second coat of spray tan. And you thought you were shocked the day before. Your teeth are like glowing against it. And in normal kind of everyday natural light, you look like that woman. Just really the you know, I just needed a smoke wagon out of my mouth and I walk around going, "Hey everybody, let's get more sun." But, you know, the process of getting my bathing suit made, I had a custom suit made, and the care that was taken to fit my body properly, and make it pretty and sparkly, and then just getting your hair and makeup, like it truly was just a whole celebration of everything that we had worked for coming to this pinnacle of celebration. So it was really a beautiful thing. And it was so much fun just to take it to the stage and just say, "Hey, here we are." And I gotta tell you, when people think that posing is easy,
mm-hmm.
it is
exhausting. It does not look easy. It looks very uncomfortable.
It's super uncomfortable, and you're trying to hold a muscle, an isolated muscle, in a pose long enough for the judges to be able to keep it in mind to evaluate against someone else.
Right.
And it is exhausting.
Wow.
But you know what? Because it was such a great supportive group, everybody was just, the audience was just uplifting and cheering, and it was just a really wonderful experience, and we all felt like we won without being the winner.
Yeah,
you know. Mm-hmm. So I felt really good about that experience, and you know, I'm not working out as hard as I was,
mm-hmm.
but it's still in the back of my head to actually win, because I am a dog with a bone. It's in my blood now, and I feel like I'm at a place now where I could really chisel it out. Like, I feel like I could just take it to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
So just once.
Yeah. That's powerful. Well, and thank you so much for sharing that journey, because I didn't actually know about that process and what you went through. And I love all the little details of the, you know, the designing of the bathing suit. I didn't even realize that that was a thing. It makes sense, right? Pageants have that where they make their gowns. Why not the bathing suit? Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, that's so powerful. Well, and it really is, you know, it's, I love that, that you're living. You create the life that you want to live. And you just do it.
You just do it.
Mm-hmm.
Just get on that horse and do it.
Just do it. Well, and you know, there are down days too. So how do you manage your mindset in those down days?
So sometimes the down days are predictable.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I have a busy 2-3 days, I know there's a down day around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
So I just settle into it,
mm-hmm.
and accept it with open arms and do quiet restorative things. You know, I might paint, read, lounge a bit, and just take the time for my body to catch up to my mind. And then there's the days when you don't see it coming. And you feel like you're on an up day and something triggers you, and you feel this immediate sense of mortality that paralyzes you.
Oh, wow.
And you have this little moment where you're just like, oh, is this the last time I'm going to participate in something like this or experience this feeling in this moment? You know, and it's a quick down spiral if you don't say, okay, this could very well be that, so let's really embrace it,
right?
But it might not be, right? And so to try and just breathe in, take a moment, mourn that little moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important to have that grief
mm-hmm.
about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then just pick yourself up, because I realize that inevitably my illness will most likely be what will take me from this world. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So in my way of looking at things, if I mourn these little moments in the moment,
yeah,
then when that time comes for me to transition,
mm-hmm.
I can really be focused in that moment on what I need to do.
Mm-hmm. Powerful.
And yeah, I don't want to have a life of any regret.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's really important for people to recognize that their feelings are real and not to push them to the side,
mm-hmm.
but just,
yeah,
just really feel it, understand it,
mm-hmm.
hold it,
mm-hmm.
and process it, whatever that looks like for an individual,
mm-hmm.
and then try to step forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's the most important thing, is just to hold the emotion, to process it, to feel it, and then to let it move through. Because they come in, yeah, waves, and
they do.
Not living with any regrets, I think, is, you know, that's the biggest thing of, you know, I should have, I could have, I, you know, and you're just doing it.
Yeah. I mean, and it's just as simple as, I don't know how many times I've driven by with my children, Funtasia on your way to Radium. And we've driven by it for years and years and years. And I'm just like, you know, I always drive by it. I always look at it. We never stop. We're stopping today. Let's go to Funtasia. And my kids are like, okay. But it's done, you know?
Yeah.
It's, or it's, you know, something catches my eye when I'm walking. Instead of going, oh, something caught my eye, let's go investigate it. Let's,
yes,
be curious.
Mm.
Let's ask questions. Let's take the time to talk to another person,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, I think it's important. I know for myself too, I've slowed down a lot, and just appreciating what's around. I used to be in that, you know, we're here, let's take in as much as we can, which is all the surface stuff, instead of just,
yeah,
really sinking in and just really taking it in, you know,
mm-hmm.
and being in the environment, appreciating the flowers that are around you.
Yeah.
I drive some of my friends nuts. I'm like, wow, look at this over here.
If my children hear me say one more time, oh my goodness, look at those mountains. They're there every day. Every day I say the same thing, but every day I see a different beauty in them.
Yes. And I think it's so important to acknowledge that beauty, because to me, that's that amplification of gratitude and appreciation, and, you know, just really taking in the beauty and the grace that is right in front of you. I think it's so important. So don't stop. Don't stop getting
it. No, oh, it won't. Oh, I won't. No, I think, like, even just this morning, I opened up the window in the kitchen, and I could hear the chickadees chirping away, and I could smell the freshness of the morning, just the morning dew. And I just stopped, and I just took a big breath in, and I went, ah, that's nature's aerosol coming in my window,
Absolutely. Oh, I love those moments too. Mornings, I'm a morning person. I love getting up early in the morning and just being in the quietness of the city or the quietness of the countryside, wherever I happen to be, or even meditating in that first early morning time where before anybody, the world starts to stir. It's such a beautiful time. And just the smells and, you know, just hearing those, the quietness, but then all the, you can hear all the layers of the birds and such a beautiful moment.
It is.
So how do you bring your art into all of this?
Well, in those times, like I have been creating for a number of years, and I found that when I had less energy to be physical, I put myself into my art and really found that when I am working on my art, that is, it's almost, it is meditative in that there is nothing else in my mind. I am not thinking of anything but how will this color lay on top of that color? Will these work together? Does this give me a sense of depth in my painting? How do I feel when I look at this? And I get lost in that for hours.
Amazing.
And it's incredibly restorative. And at the end of it, I have produced something that has a story in it, you know? And I feel so honored when someone else finds a story that they connect to when they look at it, and it makes me feel happy that they find connection in it. And it's such a I don't create art to make a living, because I would be hungry. But I create art to have connection with people. So when I put together a painting, and then I display it at a market, it's to have a conversation with a person about what is drawing them to that painting. And I have such beautiful conversations with people about their own stories and about things they have experienced and what has brought them joy or sadness, and we just then build community. And you know, I have one piece that that's related to my cancer journey, and I bring that to all my shows. It's never for sale. It's just meant to be a dialogue piece, and it brings up so many beautiful conversations with people. And I feel like it's just a way of honoring people's stories and where they're at. So if my art can do that, then that to me is a pretty neat thing.
That is powerful. And I know that piece. I've seen it many times. It's very, very powerful piece.
Yeah.
Thank you. What about, well, and I know you have, well, let's talk about your business now a little bit and just the direction that you're going in. That was, you know, again, every time I talk to you, I learn something new. I experience something new. I learned so much more about you. And I didn't know that this was a piece that you did. And so I'd love for you to talk a bit about your business and just how you got into it and what you're creating, because it's another aspect of conversation and it's another aspect of community. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
So how I got into it was really accidental. And Some time ago, I was actively working in my profession as a social worker, and I was working with children that were at risk and needing support and family counseling and those different pieces. At the same time, we were trying to have a family, mm-hmm. And we're successful with our first child, and we had a second child. Mm-hmm. And I had a health crisis with my lupus. Mm-hmm. In that health crisis, I was experiencing kidney failure and blood failure, and went through kind of intensive intervention for 12 weeks in hospital. Mm-hmm. And then from there was released and needed to be at home and unable to work in my position that I had before. Mm-hmm. So I'm home, I'm immunosuppressed at that time. Mm-hmm. I have two littles and starting to feel stronger and healthier. And by 2005, so this all kind of started in 2003, 2005, I decided that I wanted to return to work. Mm-hmm. My position was no longer available, mm-hmm. And which really hurt my heart because I really valued where I worked and I really valued the amount of energy I put into my work. Mm-hmm. And I was offered something less than what I had been doing before, mm-hmm. and I couldn't find childcare for both of my children. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the universe was just basically taking 2x4s and hitting me left and right saying, yeah, you're not going to go there. Nope, you can't do that. Nope. And I was like, why is this not working? This is when you're going against the grain of your, mm-hmm. your intuition, right?
Yeah.
And so I said, you know what? I'm going to stay home. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to start my own day home. Mm-hmm. And being who I am, I did it under an agency because I really respect processes and support and best practices. And proceeded to operate a day home in Calgary for 7 years. Mm-hmm. And in that time, received acknowledgement from the Alberta government for having the best urban day home in Calgary twice.
Awesome. So, congratulations.
Yeah. So I thought, hey, maybe I'm good at this. Maybe this is my thing. Because I just loved working with the families and the children. And it just was very, very natural for me. It didn't feel like work. Mm-hmm. I felt bad for taking people's money because I was having so much fun doing the work that I was doing. Mm-hmm. And so off the cuff, I was speaking to a school principal. Just said, hey, you know, if you ever need a program in your school, I'd be happy to do that. And I had no clue what I was talking about. I had never ran a child care program. I had no idea the framework, the scaffolding. I just start opening cans of worms and get my mouth gets me in trouble before. And she said, okay, I would love an RFP next week. I'm like, okay. Because I don't back down from a challenge either.
So cool.
And I literally brought my business out of the dirt and created it.
Amazing.
Over a number of days and frameworked it out and started Maple Roots in my first school. And today we have 5 schools. Mm-hmm. And I have to say it is invigorating work, the connection we have with our families, our schools, mm-hmm. our communities that we work in is just so heart-filling to me. And like I always knew we had great connection with our families. When I had to announce to my family about my diagnosis and that I would be a little bit more removed mm-hmm. from the programs, the outpouring of support
amazing
was overwhelming, and I truly would say that is based on the value of relationships. Mm-hmm. And that's how I've always looked at anything. Mm-hmm. And in working with our families, they'll always be part of the Maple Roots family. Mm-hmm. I'm just their weird extended auntie. So.
And that's a beautiful role to be.
Yeah. my work gives me the ability to be a creator with the children, mm-hmm. to guide them, to hear them, to empower them, to work with my educators as teams, mm-hmm. to lift them up and find their strengths and skills and, mm-hmm. and be a mentor to them, mm-hmm. to work with our families in collaboration with parenting and understanding how we can support them. It just feeds every level of me. Mm-hmm. And respect so much the relationship and the shared value back and forth. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that reciprocal value that parents see in us, mm-hmm. and that we see in them. Mm-hmm.
Great. That's amazing. And how do you, when you're in the community, do you get to pick your staff, or are they educators, part of the school system?
We hire our teams.
Okay.
So they're early childhood educators.
Okay.
And so we interview and hire them for our programs.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah.
And do you have, do you participate at the ground level, or are you just more of the overseer and...
Well, right now with COVID-19, I've physically removed myself from the program, mm-hmm. just because my risk level is sensitive, and I really need to protect that until we have a better understanding of what that is and mm-hmm. How to manage that. But prior to that, you would see me at every site mm-hmm. once or twice a week, popping in, sitting on the floor, playing, speaking with families. Like, it's
amazing.
My finger on the pulse is so important to me. So mm-hmm. this particular time is really, really difficult for me to be removed mm-hmm. from them. I would say that I'm hands-on all the way.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I can be, I'll be right in there.
Yeah.
And often the parents won't see me because they'll just think I'm one of the kids playing. So, and that's how I like to be. I like to be part of the thread, part of what's going on. I'm not an overseer of people. I don't stand back and cross my arms and, yes, everything looks good. Thank you. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
I truly want to be part of the energy and really understand what children are saying through play.
Mm.
Because they say a lot through their play. And you can really ask some really great questions to open them up. School-aged children are really this amazing age to work
mm-hmm.
with.
Mm-hmm.
And we work with them for anywhere from a year to 5 years.
Right.
So we really have these intrinsic That's relationships with them.
Development time too. Yeah.
Yeah. So
cool.
Yeah.
And what inspired that program? Why? I know it came about with a quick conversation, but did you
see
it growing this big, or did you just kind of...
I never saw it going that big. I thought, okay, I will have the one program, and I will make it the best it can be.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were approached by another school who had heard about our program.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked us to propose for their school.
Awesome.
And so, and it was a school that was struggling with adequate care at the time.
Mm.
The existing program was unpredictable and unstructured. Mm-hmm. And so we came in to kind of try and build up parent assurance. Mm-hmm. And so I felt a real purpose to doing that. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a large school, it was a very small school. And I thought, you know, this is important. The community needs it. I need to be mm-hmm. part of this.
Beautiful.
And then all of our other schools, we've been invited. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're at 5 schools, and we've been invited to open in many other schools, but I've purposely declined.
Okay.
Because I really want to be able to support our children, our families, our educators, create quality programming that is meaningful mm-hmm. and intentional.
Right.
And, you know, I couldn't imagine just building programs for the sake of building programs, and mm-hmm. it would be easy enough to do. There's such a call for childcare,
right,
that I could just build programs for the sake of building programs and staff it with whoever, and here's the framework, follow the policies and procedures, I will meet with you once a week or once a month, you know. Yeah. It just, that's when it starts feeling like it's going against my intuition.
Right. Yeah.
So,
well, that's powerful to listen to. Yeah. So powerful. So who inspires you?
Who inspires me? You know, when I was in hospital in 2003, there wasn't, iPads were not very available. Mm-hmm. And so you just watch TV.
Right.
And there was a special about this woman named Barb Tarbox. Okay. And I don't know if you recall who she was, but she was a Canadian model. Mm-hmm. Who smoked her entire life.
Oh.
Yes, and ended up getting lung cancer, mm-hmm. and continued smoking through her lung cancer. But what inspired me about her was her authenticity. Even though she was still smoking, which was very alarming, mm-hmm. She was speaking across Canada to young people about her experience. And she had, you know, a whole portfolio of her youth of being a beautiful model and slender, and then up to the point where she was withered and very ill, and it was an incredibly powerful message. And I think that was one of those moments where I was just like, wow, that is very empowering to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know why, but she's always stuck with me.
And what was the empowering piece that you took away from that?
That even though she was facing what she was facing, she still did it by her own, what I'm looking for. She was authentic. She didn't, her authenticity, I couldn't understand why she was smoking, but I understood it when I really thought about it. Mm. She knew that she wasn't going to be able to quit. She knew that it wasn't something she'd readily give up.
Right.
And even though a lot of people would judge that, mm-hmm. I think it was authentic. Like, she was straight up about it, you know, and she said, this is how powerful this has had a grip on my life, and I cannot let it go.
Right.
And I wish with everything in my being I could, even with death facing me down, I still cannot let it go.
Yeah.
And that just, her authentic statement around that mm-hmm. just made me realize how being true to that feeling inside, mm-hmm. you know, and it helped me understand, because I was judging the heck out of her. Like, I'll be mm-hmm. straight up like, oh my God, you're dying, you're smoking, like, come yeah. on, girl. But I got it, you know, like, I went, who am I? I can't make that judgment. I'm not in those shoes. I'm not in her journey. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started to kind of realize that everybody has a personal journey. Mm-hmm. And so I found that incredibly inspiring for me to respect people's journeys.
Mm. Yes.
And really hold that space for them to have their journey. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, my journey is my journey, and there's pieces that people will identify with, but it's not the definition of a cancer journey. It's not the definition of hope, or it's not the definition of fitness. Mm-hmm. It's my experiences, and mm-hmm. and people will identify with pieces of that.
Great. Well, and I think that you're a beautiful, you're the expression of and, you know, I think a lot of people think it's, well, it's living, you have cancer or you don't, you know, instead of living with cancer, you know, there is an opportunity mm-hmm. to still live your best life and thrive through whatever
truly
life is throwing
exactly.
at you, right? Exactly. It's not, you know, yes, you go through the illness aspect of it, but even in the illness aspect, you know, I think of other women who inspire me, you know, with they're glammed up, they've got their shoes, they've got their,
yeah,
do things that make them feel good about themselves instead of just feeling sick all the time, right?
Exactly.
There's things that you can do just to change your vibe, to change your energy in a big way.
Well, truly, like when I was going through my cycles of chemo, I would have these micro celebrations. Mm-hmm. So when you go through your cycle, you have 21 days. So you have your chemo, then 21 days, and then you start your next cycle of chemo.
Right.
And so for about 20 days, you lose your sense of taste. Mm. You lose your appetite. You lose just your desire to partake in food. And I am like a foodie. And I was just so sad because all my favorite foods were like cardboard and metal and just awful. But for whatever reason, on day 20, my taste buds would kind of come back and I would have my micro foodie celebration, you know, and I'd be like, okay, it's my favorite day. And I would just enjoy those things, right? And I mean, it's just a simple thing. Mm-hmm. And I found ways to celebrate.
Yeah, it's not a simple thing. I think those are the things, I call them the little wins. You have to celebrate all the little wins because those add to the big win, right?
Like, exactly.
It's not just like, oh, I woke up one day and everything was fabulous, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Before my bilateral, I had just finished my sixth cycle of chemo. Mm-hmm. I was super bald, like shiny bald, and anemic, and exhausted, and but I, being the social butterfly that I am, and the dancer and that I am, booked a whole bunch of tables at a pub where there was live music, my favorite band that night, 3 days before my surgery. And we had a bye-bye booby party.
Nice.
And, you know, and even though I could only dance for about 25 seconds and then I have to sit and recover because I was just so wiped out, I was like, whatever. You know, I put my wig on and I wore the most scandalous shirt I could to really just say, hey, they have lived a good life and they are going out on a high note and appreciate it. I'm good with it. Please feel like you can. You know? Like I just had fun with it. Mm-hmm. It was such a great night. It was just all my girlfriends, and we had the best time.
That's amazing.
So, yeah. Like, it's just really finding a moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's finding a moment and just being with it, celebrating it, and moving to the next celebration.
Exactly. Not that I'm a big partier, but life is a party, and it's just a really, the energy that comes for me, like, I really need energy from people. Mm-hmm. And I think during kind of the COVID shutdown in March, mm-hmm. and April, and kind of May, I just felt myself withering, because it's not the same as seeing people in real time. And there was only so much I could vampire out of my children, you know.
I went a little crazy. I went Zoom crazy. I was just signing up for anything, everything, just to have that social connection, because I live alone.
Yes.
I'm single, live alone, and nobody was coming to visit me, you know, so it was just that. I was just reaching out to all kinds of people and just Zooming all over the place. So,
yeah.
And then I discovered Zoom burnout is a real thing.
It is.
Yeah, no, but I think the celebrations, and I think it's redefining what party means. We have this connotation that party means, you know, to get drunk and just, you know, be half asleep walking through it. And instead, it's like, no, this, and that's what the celebration is. The celebration is an uplifting, it's celebratory.
Exactly.
You know, it's just, it's every step of the way, I think, is so important.
Well, and this is rebounding energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. you know, you feel it off of people. Like, you're reacting, you're being proactive. Like, this, mm-hmm. like the energy exchange is so moving around, and it's just, mm-hmm. it's palpable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I think it's really, for me, it fuels me, and I'm just happy to get back a little bit more into the world. I'm still cautious, but
absolutely. I'm cautious to a point where, like, I just go where I need to go. And I don't have any illnesses or anything like that, but it's stressful. And it's, as an empath, I'm an empath, so I just feel everything that everybody else is feeling. And, you know, it was really difficult grocery shopping even in the beginning, because I would go in and all I felt was everybody's fear, you know, and there's still a sense of fear, but it's different. It's a very, before it was like a fear of just being, you know, out and exposed. Now it's just this judgment fear. Like, there's a very different energy, which is, it's fascinating just to observe and to experience, but. You know, again, it's just do everything I can just to keep my vibes high and just keep taking care of myself and what feels good to me.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had the opportunity to meet a friend and sit on a patio,
mm-hmm.
and have pub food. And I was just like, okay, this is okay. Like, I feel good and safe, and we're outside, and my friend is part of my cohort, so we're good, you know?
Yeah.
But just the social piece and just trying to remind myself that we have all these things that we can do in and around our city.
I'm really noticing that. The biggest thing I've noticed is more families. Like, I used to see a lot of older people or new mothers that were always out walking about. And now it's families. It's like groups of families that are out walking about. It's families, whole families are going on holidays again together, and they're happy about it. I've heard so many. I love all the stories that have been coming out of it. I've been hearing so many stories of even siblings, you know, they were quarantined together and they never really truly connected, and now they're like best friends.
Yes.
And healing of relationships, you know, within family dynamics and, you know, so there's
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And finding different ways to celebrate, finding different ways to connect, in creative ways. And I think that's the coolest thing to watch, is humans are so creative. They're going to find ways that still satisfy them. And I think that's important to remind ourselves. You know, we don't have to just, you know, follow the rules and cut everything out. It's like, how can you still, you know, follow the rules and yet find that joy and that happiness of your contribution to it?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's just, we're all amazingly creative. When people say, well, I'm not creative. Oh, you are.
Yeah.
We gotta just tap that open for you. You are. It's there.
Totally. Awesome. Well, we're just at the end of our time. Thank you so much, Robin. I so enjoy you. And any last words of insight or wisdom that you'd like to impart with us?
Well, I just, no matter what a person's journey is in life, be it illness, be it divorce, be it job loss, whatever, that there is always a corner, and there's always hope. And I think hope always has been the thing that pulls me along and gets me around to the next corner.
Hope always. Without hope, hope gives us inspiration.
Yes. Yes.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much again, and just
thank you
on so many levels, and I love being watching your journey. You're definitely someone that I keep my eye on, and I'm inspired by. I'm like, what's Robin up to? What's she creating in the world? So thank you for that. And to our viewers, I really hope that you enjoyed our conversation today. If you'd like to comment and share in the box below. Also, you can connect with Robin. I'm going to be sharing her contact information in the show notes. And so you can reach her at Flat Fit and Fabulous on Facebook and connect with her there. So until next time, you know, be light, hope, and love, and abundant love. Bye for now. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you.